Shalom. One of the questions that all of you, all of us, will be faced with and are faced with by modern man is, do I really have to be religious in order to be moral? We see today that there are a lot of humanists, a lot of universalists, who are really idealistic and moral people. And if so, what are the advantages of religious morality? And is there such a thing as secular morality? And Rav Kook has a very, very interesting take on this. First of all, as we've learned in the past, this is a modern question. Because in the world of paganism, in the ancient world, morality simply was not on the agenda. And the more religious a person was, if he was a paganist, the more immoral he was, where it led to his giving human sacrifices, and the temples were full of gluttonous and wine and meat and orgies. And then comes monotheism, and brought with it the idea of morality. As we learned in the past, this is the concept of one God who is perfect, and he doesn't need to take anything because he doesn't lack anything, but he is a giver. A monotheistic God, by definition, is going to be a giver, not a taker. And our imitatio Dei, the God that we emulate, is that we also have to be givers. Similarly, in paganism, the gods are always fighting with each other. Whereas in monotheism, God is a God of peace, and that is the God that we emulate. But all of this was 3,300 years ago. When you look at the Codex of Hammurabi, and you see that Avram Avinu's monotheism was a giant step for morality. But today, after 3,300 years of monotheism, 3,300 years of morality in the world, we can proudly and safely say that morality has succeeded and that it is on the agenda. And even Buddhism or paganist religions today talk about morality, and they believe in morality. It's on their agenda. And if so, that just sharpens the question of why today do we need Torah and God for the sake of morality. Now, the first point is, and it's a very important point, although it's not the main point of the shiur, is that Torah is not just about morality. Torah is about all of the godly ideals. And justice is also a godly ideal. And Jewish nationalism, love of Israel, is also a godly ideal. And family is a godly ideal. There are a lot of godly ideals in addition to morality. Now, it's true that of the 13 traits, attributes of God, the first and the most outstanding are his morality. That is Rachum and Chanun. He is merciful and righteous. But the idea of justice and truth also come up. And that's an important point, that there are a lot of godly ideals in addition to morality. In addition to looking at the 13 attributes, look at the 10 spheres, the Eser Sfirot, where obviously Chesed is a very important one, but wisdom and knowledge and strength and eternity, and there are a lot of other godly ideals as well. But that being said, our topic is, what are the advantages of godly morality, what Rav Kook calls Musar HaKodesh, or Musar HaElohi. And we're going to start out with a paragraph, paragraph number 4, from Orot HaMilchama, where Rav Kook writes about how he was shaken during World War I. This was being written during World War I, which you have to remember, during World War I, it was not called World War I, because there was no World War II. It was the big war, the Great War, where something like 20 million people were killed, soldiers were killed, also civilians. It was the first war that had most of Europe against most of Europe. America came from the other side of the world. The first war where airplanes, the Air Force was used. The first war, or major war, where tanks were used. The Germans used poisonous gas during World War I. And World War I was so tragic that it shocked the world. And in fact, the League of Nations, which was the first Gilgul of the United Nations, was a direct result of the shocking World War I that convinced mankind that we have to look for a better way. And in the midst of all the bloodshed, writes Rav Kook, this is on page 15 of Orot HaMilchama, Nichtam avon shofchei adamim, malchei adama hazedim v'chol margizei eretz. There is a terrible stain of the sin of bloodshed that the kings of the world, of today's world, have stained the world. Lo yichupar la'aretz ladam asher shufach ba ki'im bedam shofcho. The only way to atone for all of the blood that these kings spilled is by doing away with those kings. And in fact, a great surge of national independence, of self-determination, of anti-dictators came in the advent of World War I, right? Communist Russia, they overthrew the Tsar in the advent of World War I. Vakip kapara muchrachat lavo. Bitul, what is going to be the inevitable positive outcome or punishment? Bitul klali lechol mechonot hatarbut shel achshav. To do away with the culture of machinery of modernism. Im kol shikran v'tarmitan, with all of its deceit. Im kol zuamatan hara'a v'arsana tzifoni, all of the poison. Rav Kook looks at German society, that side which started World War I, and he saw a modern culture. You have to remember, the Germans were at the top of the world in psychology, in physics, in music, in art. And Rav Kook looked at the machinery of culture, and he saw that culture, modernism, is not the answer. Very often people today think that if we can bring the lower class out of the ghetto and send them to the universities, that will solve the problem of crime. And Germany taught us, and even World War II taught us even more, that it's not enough to get into modernism in order to be moral. Because a murderer with a doctorate is a lot more dangerous than a crude, primitive murderer. The Germans in World War II, only the Germans, could have annihilated 6 million Jews with scientific methods and gas chambers, something that crude and primitive anti-Semites wouldn't even come close to. And so that, Rav Kook is telling us that, number one, don't think that modernism, even if it is built upon 3,300 years of morality, modern culture, technology, is not the solution. We have to continue learning Musar. But then comes the question, and that's our main question, so what about secular morality? Maybe it's enough just to learn humanism. And maybe we don't need religion for that. To this, Rav Kook writes in source number 6, in Musar HaKodesh, the very beginning of the holy Musar, the godly Musar, Rav Kook Dafka surprises us, and he writes in support of secular morality. Mle'im anu regesh musar. We, mankind, is full of a feeling of musar. Whether religious or non-religious, man, woman, Jewish or Gentile, every person was created with a conscience. Kmeim anu lechiot chayim chaye tor. Everybody wants to live a life of purity. Dimyonenu malhiv et cheshek levavenu, litzayir hayoter nisgav hayoter na'a. We all dream and imagine how great the world is going to be when the world is a better place, when everyone is going to be good and moral. Hayoter tahor vayoter ne'etzal, that lofty spiritual world. Hachefetz ha'pnimi, our internal desire, which also infers that there is an external desire, which is part of the problem. And this is something that we've learned about in the past, that man has an internal desire, which is idealistic, what we call the Yetzer HaTov, and also an external desire, which is what we call the Yetzer Hara. And it's the difference between what I want, that's my higher desire, and what I feel like doing, that's my lower or more lazy desire. So when we talk about our inner desire, Choshek Shiyeritzonenu Akavua Tahor VeKadosh, we would like to constantly, eternally be involved with purity and morality, holiness. That we should be super idealistic. Paragraph Bet. V'chol elu atshukot einan mitgashmot ki mal yedei mesirutenu apnimit v'achitzona elor Hashem ela musar Elohi hamitgale b'torah b'masoret b'sechel uv'yosher. Rav Kook explains that there are four expressions of morality, which all really trace back to God. There is the morality of the Torah, the morality of tradition, the morality of logic, and the morality of justice, of our conscience. And if I would have a board, I would draw that everything begins with God, and God brings the morality to the world with these four different venues. First of all, the Torah, which half the Torah is mitzvot ben adam lechaviro, mitzvot of morality. But there's also the masoret, tradition. For example, it's been already two or three, maybe even some families, four generations, where the Jewish family has been away from religion. Nevertheless, Jewish tradition is to be the people of the book. You go into any Jewish home, you will find books. Jewish men, I might have told you the story once about Mrs. Moriarty. My mother had this cleaning lady, an Irish Catholic cleaning lady, very nice woman. And she comes in one day and says to my mother, congratulate me. My daughter just got engaged. And you like this, she says to my mother. He's a nice Jewish boy. So Mrs. Moriarty obviously didn't think of the ramifications or the problem that we have with intermarriage. But my mother asked her, why are you so happy that he's a Jewish boy? So Mrs. Moriarty answered, she says, what do you mean? Everybody knows that nice Jewish boys make good husbands. They don't get drunk like the Irish boys. They don't curse. They don't beat their wives like the Irish boys. And this is an Irish woman speaking. And in fact, that is not so much Torah, but that is tradition. That's Masoret. A third venue where God reveals morality to the world is logic. It's logical to be moral. I'll be moral to you, you be moral to me. If all the nations would help each other, the world would be a better place. It's logical. And number four is Yosher, the conscience. The God who gave us the Torah and the God who created is also the God who created the world. And he created us also with logic and also with a conscience that we feel bad when we see or do bad, and we feel good when we see or do good. So what Rav Kook is saying, to summarize until now, he's saying there is definitely such a thing as secular morality. It comes from the conscience, it comes from a logic, but in fact, if you trace it down, it's not really secular morality, because who created logic and who created the conscience, it's the same God who gave us the Torah and gave us tradition. In other words, secular morality is good, and it's so good, in fact, that it is actually part of the godly morality. And it comes from the same place and will bring us to the same place. So if so, what's the problem? Paragraph Gimel. Hamusar shelchol einenu amok. This is problem number one. Advantage number one of religious or godly morality is that it's deeper. Secular morality doesn't go deep. Ve'no nichnas bepnimiyut ha-neshama. Va'af al pi she'adam nimshach acharav l'tova yedei shemakir et ha-yosher she'esh b'divrei higayon. And even though that the logic and the conscience get us to be good people, ein lahadracha zot tfisa omedet bifnei ha-histarut shel ta'avot shonot kesh'ein mitorerot b'chozka. Secular morality cannot withstand the yitzarim, the drives, when they are awakened with all of their strength. Simple example. If you walk the streets of America, and you take a survey, and you ask people, is it good to be moral? You'll have almost 100% who say, yeah, it's good to be moral. Then ask those same people question number two. Is it moral to cheat on your spouse? And they will say, no, it's not moral to cheat on your spouse. Right? You want to get divorced, but as long as you're married, loyalty is a very basic, minimal, moral given. Okay. So, question number three. Do you cheat on your spouse? Now here, we actually do have surveys where more than 50% of Americans, married Americans, cheat on their spouse. Now, what happened? All right, if they all believe that it's good to be moral, and they all believe that it's immoral to cheat on your spouse, so why are so many people doing it? The answer is their yetzer hara. When it wakes up, the morality goes to sleep. And that's why Voltaire, in a famous quote, said, even if there wasn't a God, we would have to invent him. Because if there's no God, we're going to have anarchy. There needs to be an objective morality, an objective moral code, a God who says, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill, period. And that God also sees everything, knows everything. He's also the God who's around on Judgment Day. And there is a heaven and there is a hell. And this can hopefully, and very often does, quench the desires when they are burning. In the words of Rav Dessler, in Michtav Me'Eliyahu, he writes that, in English it's called Strive for Truth. He writes that Judaism really doesn't talk about hell all that much. The Christians talk about it a lot. We don't talk about it that much. But it is mentioned because when the Yetzer Hara, the desire, is burning, the only way to deal with it is with a fire which burns even hotter. And that is the fires of hell. That's according to Rav Dessler. Anyway, I'll give you a simple example. We had a guest once, she, an older woman, she passed away, who was very, very obese. And when she would come over for Shabbat, she would ask, what can I bring? And my wife would say, just bring yourself. But this woman, she loved desserts. And whenever she came for Shabbat, she came with shopping bags full of cakes and cookies and candies and anything. And she had a sweet tooth, and One Friday night she came, and my kids always like to meet her at the bus stop to help her with the bags of goodies. And she comes to our house, and Friday night, as the meal is finishing off, and we put out all of the goodies that this woman had brought. And she, like I said, has a sweet tooth, and she is devouring the cookies and the candy and the chocolate. It's just nonstop eating, and she's so happy, and the kids, everyone's happy. And then all of a sudden, my wife yells out from the kitchen, "Oi, ha'ugiyot en chalavi. The cookies are milchig, they're dairy." This woman, who I had never seen her push away a dessert, all of a sudden, when you bring God into the picture, you bring religion into the picture, she found the self-discipline and pushed away those cookies. In other words, religion helps us realize, helps us discover a self-discipline that sometimes we don't even know that we have. And this is the power of godly musar. Now, I'm not so naive as to think that religious people will not lie in order to save money or to save their driving license. But here, the solution is really that we have to learn more musar in our yeshiva programs, in our midrashot programs. Because everybody knows that any religious person, even a half-religious person, if you were to offer him $1 million to eat a kezayit of pig, he wouldn't take it. He said, "I'm not going to sell my ideals, my religion, just for money." Now, if we would understand and teach, and it would be accepted and known by all religious Jews, that just like you're not allowed to eat pig for all of the money in the world, you're also not allowed to lie for all of the money in the world. Now, a religious Jew who could withstand the desire to save money when it comes to eating pig, he will also do it when it comes to lying or cheating, as soon as he brings God into the picture. And this is a very strong advantage that religious morality has that secular morality doesn't have. When a secular person is awakened with the desire, there's a famous story of Bertrand Russell, who was a professor of ethics and of the humanities. And he was caught cheating with one of his students, cheating on his wife. And obviously it was a big scandal. How could a professor of the humanities do something so inhumane, so immoral? To which he answered, "Nobody expects a professor to be a triangle." In other words, I could teach humanity and morals, but I don't have to do it. On the other hand, when you bring God into the picture in religious morality, you do have to act upon your morals. And again, there is a judgment day, there is a God who sees everything, and that is why a lot less religious people cheat on their spouse than non-religious people. Even nevertheless, Rav Kook says, and he admits, that true secular morality is not as deep and far-reaching and self-disciplining as religious morality. But even so, there are definitely secular people who are super moral. Here comes point number two. V'kal v'chomer she'en biyad musar rafui kaze ladrich et haklalot. It is true that there are individuals who are very moral through secularism. But that's not enough. The goal of the Torah is to bring morality to the masses. And the masses, as we said in the past, the tzibur, the word tzibur is comprised of tzadi, bet, vav, and resh, which stands for tzadikim, benonim, urishaim. when you talk about the masses, that means that there are going to be more educated and less educated, more intelligent and less intelligent. That's what's called in statistics the bell curve, where everything is divided up like a bell, whereas on each side of on any given topic, 12.5% are extremely X, and on the other extreme, 12.5% are extremely not X. But almost everybody, 75%, the vast majority of the people are in the middle, where they could go either way. Now, if you look at the bell curve, in all societies, just about all societies, where is there the most crime? In the lower class. And everybody says, well, because those people, they don't have a lot of money. And it's true, the lower class is a problem. On the other hand, if I look at the Haredi community, which almost all of them in Israel are living under the level of poverty, whether it be in Yerushalayim, whether it be in Bnei Brak, but there's not that much crime. There's almost no crime, no violent crime, within the religious community. And the reason is because religion, Torah, can bring the morals not just to a handful of idealistic people, of intelligent people, of super moral people, but the question is, how can you bring morality to the masses? Let's look in, jump for a second, to Rav Kook in source number 5. Source number 5, paragraph Gimel. Let's jump down to the third line of paragraph Gimel. Why is it so important to have a Jewish state? Liman da'at, so that it should be known. שלא רק יחידים חכמים מצוינים, חסידים ונזרים ואנשי קודש, חיים באור הידי האלוהית. That not only individuals, intellectuals, tzaddikim, chasidim, hermits, that not only they live according to the godly ideals, because that you have in all societies, even before Avraham Avinu, there were individual tzaddikim. Adam was a tzaddik, Chanoch, Metushelach, Noach, just about every generation had a tzaddik. But the problem is that they were all individuals. That is all the way at the extreme of the bell curve of a handful of intellectual idealistic people. But Am Yisrael, the nation of Israel, with the Torah of Israel, comes to teach us, Ki gam amim shlemim, even entire nations, mitukanim u'meshuchlalim b'chol tikunei atarbut v'yishuv ha-medini, modern nations, which have all of the modern apparatuses, amim shlemim, entire nations, akololim b'tocham et kol hazderot enoshiyot ha-shonot, which have all of the different classes, the upper class, the middle class, the lower class, the white collar, the blue collar, mina roma intelligentsia manutit haprushit, from the artists, the separatists, hamaskelet, the intellectuals, vakdosha, the super religious, ademarchot arechavot asocialiot, hapolitiot veekonomiot, all the way down to the lower classes, including the right wing, the left wing, ad proletarian lechol plagotav, all the way down to the proletariat, the working classes, afilu hayoter namuchu megusham. Even the most crude, working, lower class, when you bring religion into the picture, there's going to be a lot less murder and drugs and crime and stealing. You look at the religious communities in Yemen, in Morocco, in Ashkenaz, or today, you go to a place like Kochav HaShachar, where I live, or Beit El, or Kiryat Moshe, or Alon Shvut, there's almost no crime. And even though in all of those, in a place like Beit El, it's a large place, there are already 10, maybe 15,000 people. 15,000 people include statistically all different types. In order to have a survey to be considered legitimate in Israel, you have to interview at least 500 people. 500 is considered, there's going to be right wing and left wing, more intelligent, less intelligent, male, female, Sephardic, Ashkenazic, Ethiopians, everyone. If you can have not a city of 500, not 5,000, but even 10,000 people, where there's almost no police ever who comes into Kohava Shachar or her religious yeshuv, simply because the way of life is based on Musar HaKodesh. And this is advantage number two. Whereas advantage number one, that Musar HaKodesh, religious morality, can stand up much stronger with self-discipline, because God sees everything. But point number two is, even if there are individuals who are secularly moral, and even super moral, that's not enough, because we want to bring morality to the entire state, to the entire world, to the upper class and the lower class. And that is point number two, that Musar HaKodesh can reach the masses. Advantage number three is that in Judaism, Musar, religious Musar, has a definition. I mentioned that half of the Torah is mitzvot ben adam lechaviro. But it's not just enough to have a mitzvah to give tzedakah. How much do you give in tzedakah? Well, our Shulchan Aruch says 10%. On the other hand, in other places, if you just say, give charity, people aren't going to give all that much. The same thing with returning a lost object. If you have an obligation to return a lost object, that gives you a definition of what is objective morality. On the other hand, is cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is that man tends to justify that which is convenient, that which is comfortable. And therefore, if you don't have a God in the picture, very often you'll find secular people who are justifying, and they're not intellectually honest. On the other hand, a religious person who has a definition, what does it mean to steal? What does it mean to talk Lashon Hara? What does it mean to give tzedakah? All of these are halachically defined. And that's a big advantage. It's not left up to man to define for himself where he'll let himself off easy. But this leads us to point number four. Point number four is that the Torah, not only does it have an objective definition, which obligates us all, but it has a super high demand. I remember once I was talking to an Ulpan Giyur. My father ran a Ulpan for converts, those non-Jews who wanted to convert to Judaism on Kibbutz Yavne. And whenever I would come for Shabbat, almost every time my father would ask me if I could give a sicha to the group. And obviously a convert, even a born from birth Jew, it takes a lifetime to learn all of Judaism. So what does a convert do? You give him a taste of this and a taste of that. Let him get a general overview of a lot of different examples of mitzvot. So I asked my father, did anybody learn with them the laws of Lashon Hara? He said, no, go for it. So I spoke with them about the laws of Lashon Hara, and they all agreed right away that it's not moral, it's not nice to gossip and to cut people down. And then we started getting into the details of Lashon Hara. And they were blown away. I remember when I spoke about Avak Lashon Hara, that you're not even allowed to say something positive to a group where somebody in the group, it will lead them to say something negative about a person. They couldn't believe the unbelievably high super demands of morality. Now, we have super demands towards our parents, the laws of Kibud Avaim. We have super demands regarding Lashon Hara. Whereas a non-religious person, he knows that it's not nice to gossip, but he probably won't have the guts, if everybody is gossiping, he won't have the guts to get up and say, let's change the topic, or to get up and walk away. A religious Jew does have that. Even more so, I remember one time I asked my father if anybody learned with them the laws of Brachot, So my father told me that they had learned the laws of Birchot Ne'anim, brachot, before and after food, but the other brachot, we can learn. So I'll never forget, they fell off their chairs when we spoke about the bracha of Asher Yatzar. Who would have thought of thanking God for helping me go to the bathroom? That is a super moral demand. And the more you learn the halachot of the Avat Chesed, the Chavetz Chaim is a great book on mitzvot ben Adam lechaviro, the more you realize that secular morality doesn't even come close. It doesn't get even up to the ankles of the demands of religious morality. And those are demands that only God, who is our manufacturer, only He knows that we are capable of doing. And that is another advantage of religious morality, of Musar HaKodesh. Another point is, Rav Kook adds another point that we can see together in Source 7. In Orot HaKodesh, page Chav Dalid 2, HaMusar Shel Kfira Eino Klum. Rav Kook says that morality, which is atheist, is not morality. Why? Mipnei she'akfira be'atzma hi hefech hatzedek v'amusar hayisodi. Because kfira, to totally say there is no God, not to thank Him for anything, that is the opposite of morality. What does Rav Kook mean here? An atheist, no atheist, knows for sure that there's no God. He can say you can't prove God. He could say he doesn't believe that there's a... He could say he doesn't see God. But nobody can ever prove that something doesn't exist. So he knows that maybe it is, maybe there isn't. Now, I'll tell an example. I once came home from yeshiva. This was before there were cell phones, where you would check your mail messages. And I came home from yeshiva, and I heard on the message there was the bank had called and left a message to call the bank. So I called the bank, and the banker says, in those days you could talk to a real human bank teller. He asked me, "Are you expecting 10,000 euro?" I said, "Not that I know of. I'll ask my wife." "Why?" He says that somebody deposited 10,000 euro in our account. So my wife comes home. She was learning for Michlala. In Michlala, in Yerushalayim, we were living in Kiryat Arba. I was learning in the yeshiva. And we're trying to figure out where could this gift come from. And we boiled it down to two relatives. One lives in Tel Aviv. The other lives in France. And we didn't know which of the two it was. We thought maybe it was probably more the one from France because it was in euro. And we definitely had to call to say thank you, right? Somebody gives you 10,000 euro is more than $10,000. So it was just a question, are we going to thank the one from Tel Aviv or the one from France? So we started with the one from France. We called him up. And he says, "Hi, how are you?" etc., etc. And then he says, "Did you get my surprise?" And we understood that it was him. We guessed correct. Now, even if we weren't sure that it was him, and even if it wasn't him, maybe say it was the other, it would not be moral not to say thank you. Even if you're in doubt, maybe it was somebody else who gave it to me. But we in Judaism believe that a person is supposed to be altruistic. You're supposed to give even without getting anything in return. That's the highest form of chesed. One step beneath that is to give someone, knowing that he's going to pay you back, give you a favor in return. Okay, that's not why I'm doing it, but okay, that's a little less than being totally altruistic. One step beneath that is that somebody already gave me something, and obviously it's only decent that if he gave me something on my birthday, I will give him something in return on his birthday. Obviously, that's a lower form of giving. But what's even lower than that? The Sefer HaChinuch writes on the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. He writes that the minimum of morality is to say thank you, where it doesn't even cost you anything. Somebody already gave you something. You're not going to give them something in return, but at least say thank you. Just say two words. And that's what Rav Kook is saying, that even if a person is not sure that there is a God, even if you're in doubt, it's immoral not to say Modeh Ani Lefanecha, because maybe there is a God, and even if it's in doubt, you have to say thank you. That is point number five. Point number six is positive peer pressure. In the religious community, not just in Judaism, also in Catholicism, also the Protestants and the Christians, there is a positive peer pressure to give, to volunteer. I have a daughter who did her master's in social work, and she did a paper on who donates more to charity, who volunteers more hours. And it turns out that women are more benevolent than men. Women give more charity than men. Women volunteer more hours than men. Religious volunteer a lot more than non-religious. Religious give a lot more charity than non-religious. And you could say it's because of the previous points that we mentioned, that religion gives a definition of how much to give. Religion gives a super demand that we have to give a lot. But there's also, it's a social issue of pressure. If it's seen as status to give, if it's seen as something positive from a young age, whoever volunteers, whoever gives, that's why within the religious community, it's so accepted for the boys to try and get into the most crack combat units, because they want to be altruistic. That is what they learn in Bnei Akiva. That's what they grow up on in their yeshivas. And that's what all their friends are doing. And the same thing the girls in Shirut Lumi. The girls want to give, and they want to give, and they want to be altruistic. Sometimes they want to go out to the furthest place possible where other people are not willing to go. Where do they get that from? That is positive peer pressure. And that's why in religious communities, it's status to be moral, it's status to give, it's status to volunteer, and that is a very big advantage. The seventh and final point is, again, I have to stress what we stressed at the beginning. Religion is not just morality. There are other midot as well. Gvura, emet, nationalism, family, justice, strength, truth. All of these are also ideals. And the Torah, Davka, teaches us to balance morality with strength. Usually the two are seen as contradictory. David HaMelech was also called Adino HaEtzni because he was Adin, he was sensitive, he was a poet, he was a musician, he was godly, he was spiritual. But when he went out to the battlefield, David knew how to take care of the enemy. Gvura does not contradict morality. But you need a Shulchan Aruch, you need a God to teach you how to balance the two. The same thing with justice. Justice very often is the opposite of compassion. Because justice is Midat Adin. This is what's right, whether it's nice or not. Judaism believes also in justice and also in compassion. How do we balance the two? Hashem teaches us how to balance the two. That's exactly why we need the Shulchan Aruch for. Because life is not just morality. There are a lot of other, like we said, there are 13 attributes of God. There are 10 spheres of the Kabbalistic ideals. And we need religion, we need Torah, to help us balance them all together. Not just to live a moral life, but to fit that in and harmonize it together with all of the other ideals. To summarize, we saw that there are 7 points, 7 advantages of the godly morality, religious morality. Number one, religious morality can withstand even the strongest yitzarim. That if pig equals telling the lying, then a religious person will not lie even for all the money. According to Voltaire, again, even if there was no God, we would have to invent him in order to bring a morality into the world. Point number two, even though there are individual idealistic secular moralists, that's not enough. We want morality to reach all of the masses, even the lower class, the entire bell curve. Point number three, religious morality gives a very clear definition of morality, which doesn't leave too much room for cognitive dissonance. You can't just look for excuses. Point number four, not only is there an objective definition of morality, but there's a super high demand of morality. Something, the halakha demands things that no person would ever dream of such a high level of morality. Point number five, atheism is immoral. Because even if you're in doubt, you have to say thank you. Point number six, positive peer pressure within all religious communities, and that's something which helps us bring out the best in ourselves. And point number seven, the world is not just about morality. There are other important midot and ideals as well. And davka, we need the help of the Torah and a God who knows everything, a manufacturer, who knows how to balance and harmonize morality, also with justice and truth and strength and nationalism and all of the other ideals. And halavai, we should get the most and take advantage of the beautiful Musar HaKodesh that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us. Shalom.